Hi, everybody. This is the All Things That Go Bump in the Night podcast. I'm your host, Kelly, and I hope you all are staying safe and things are slowly starting to open up. I know here in Washington State, we just entered into phase two of everything opening up. With that being said, you know, make sure you guys are still following good social distancing, wear your face masks. I know there's a lot of controversy with those. You know, they're not meant to keep you from getting the illness. They're to keep you from spreading the illness. So I'm a very big proponent on actually using those. With that said, I think we should probably just get started. Okay, so I'm going to be doing cursed films today. There's a lot of them out there. I didn't realize there were as many out there as I got. It's going to be kind of a little bit of a shorter episode just because of the fact that I was trying to get all my schooling done this week, so I didn't even get to really start my podcast or my research until this afternoon after work. So, oh my God, swipe left for chat. I'm dumb. So I'm going to start with Poltergeist. Poltergeist is a movie from 1982. That movie was about a husband and wife, Steve and Diane Freeling, and their three children, teenage daughter Dana, 11-year-old son Robbie, and 6-year-old daughter Carol Ann. The family moves to a housing development, unaware that the homes are being built on a cemetery. Instead of moving the bodies, the company, you know, just moves the headstones, proceeding to develop over the bodies. Obviously, this angers the spirits, resulting in Carol Ann being kidnapped into a sort of alternate reality. It starred Craig T. Nelson, Joe Beth Williams, Heather O'Rourke, and Zelda Rubinstein. There were also two sequels that were released in 1986 and 1988, as well as a remake in 2015, which the remake did really bad. I did the same thing. Yeah. It's been a rough week. So the curse surrounding the poltergeist started pretty early on. The skeletons that were used happened to be real skeletons. In a weird turn of events, it was actually cheaper to use real skeletons bought than to have prop skeletons made. Likely these were bought from a medical school, but I can only imagine how those spirits really must have felt. 5 months after the release of the first movie, 22-year-old Dominique Dunn, who played the teenage daughter Dana, she was strangled to death in her driveway by her abusive ex-boyfriend, John Thomas Sweeney. She lapsed into a coma but was removed from life support 5 days later. John was sentenced to 7 years in prison for voluntary manslaughter but was only released after 3.5 years. He eventually changed his name, and his whereabouts are currently unknown. So before the second film hit the theaters in September of 1985, Julian Beck, who played Kane in the second movie, died of stomach cancer at 60 years old. Not too surprising there, but just adds to everything. So in June of 1987, Will Sampson, who played a Native American shaman in the second film, died of malnutrition and kidney failure. He was only 53 years old. Due to all of the heavy feelings on the set of the second film, Will, who was also a shaman in real life, performed an exorcism on the set after staying late one night. The next day, many of the cast and crew remarked on how light the set felt. What they didn't know was that the production had once again used real skeletons, which pissed Will off when he found out. In September of 1992, Richard Lawson, who played a paranormal psychologist in the first film, was on board U.S. Air Flight 405. At the very last minute, he ended up upgrading his seat, and the plane ended up crashing, killing 27 out of the 51 people, all of which were in the same area of the plane that he was supposed to be sitting in. Basically, because he upgraded, he survived the plane crash. In 2009, Lou Perryman, who also starred in the first movie, was brutally murdered at 67 years old when a recently released convict broke into his home with an axe. He was found, tried, is spending time in jail for that. Hi, Rose. Hi, Mom. So shortly after the third film was supposed to be released, on January 31st, 1988, 12-year-old Heather O'Rourke started developing flu-like symptoms. The next morning, she collapsed in her home, so she was rushed to community hospital in El Cajon. But en route, ended up going into cardiac arrest. She was then life-flighted to the Children's Hospital of San Diego. It was discovered that a portion of her intestine had ballooned to 4 inches in diameter and would need emergency surgery to repair an acute bowel obstruction. However, she died just 2 hours into the surgery. Heather's cause of death was ruled a congenital stenosis of the intestine, complicated by septic shock. So it was really weird that she did not show any signs of bowel issues at all throughout her childhood, if this was a congenital issue. I guess from what others were saying was that it is not uncommon either. There was also a scene with an animatronic clown that basically tries to strangle the little boy, Robbie. During the scene, he was basically like screaming, and the directors were basically like, wow, this kid is really good at what he's doing. What had happened was the animatronic clown had actually malfunctioned and was basically crushing the kid to death. So this is where my fear of clowns originates. I would have thought It or, some other movie like that. That freaking clown was so creepy too. Seriously. Can't sleep, clowns will eat me. No, I was never really scared of clowns until I watched Scary Movie 2 and the scene with the clown, I was like, nah, that's wrong. That's really wrong. But yeah, so basically they thought that he was just this really fantastic actor when in reality he was being hurt really bad by the clown. I'm sure he now has a fear of clowns himself. So the next is The Omen, a movie released in 1976 about a U.S. diplomat whose son happens to be the Antichrist. Things started happening before the film had even begun filming. One of the things that I had read that I didn't write down was there was somebody involved in the production. I think it was a producer who said that this movie would basically be cursed because of the fact that the devil, he likes to, he operates in the shadows. And what you're basically doing is you're bringing him to the light and you're exposing him for what he is. And so, they were basically prepared from the very beginning that some weird things might happen, but I don't think they realized just the extent of it. They creeped me out as a kid after watching Poltergeist 2. Voldemort. Yeah. where'd it go? Okay, so in 1975, just 2 months before filming, lead actor Gregory Peck's son killed himself via a gunshot wound to the head. When Gregory got on the plane to head to filming, his plane was struck by lightning. Obviously, he survived, but nobody saw this as, like, a bad omen. Get it? A bad omen? I'm dumb. So, just 2 weeks later, movie exec Mark Newfold's plane was also struck by lightning. At one point, the production team hired a plane to conduct, like, Yes. So at one point, the production team hired a plane to conduct aerial shoots, but at the last minute, the plane went to another client. So it got hired by another client. At takeoff, the plane crashed, killing every single person on board. During production, Newfield was staying at the London Hilton with his wife when the building was bombed by the Irish Republic Army. And to keep with the theme, oh wait, sorry, getting ahead of myself. So there's a scene in the movie involving baboons going violently or reacting violently to Damien's presence. So an animal trainer was called to the set to basically kind of keep the baboons, I don't want to say in check because they're wild animals, you can't keep them in check, but basically make sure that nothing happens to the baboons and nobody else on set. So the very next day, he was killed by a tiger. The tiger grabbed him by the head, killing him instantly. So, to keep with the theme of the movie, it was released June 6th, 1976, so 6676. In August of that year, so 2 months later, special effects genius John Richardson was involved in a car accident in Holland. He and his passenger, Liz Moore, had crashed near a sign in Holland that said, it was pronounced, it's spelled O-M-M-E-N, so Omen, 66.6 kilometers. 66.69 kilometers, sorry. So John survived, but Liz was beheaded. There is a scene in the movie that shows a graphic beheading in a car accident. So that was really weird. Really weird turn of events. A stuntman in the movie named Alf Joint was working on a scene for another movie called Bridge Too Far. The scene called for him to jump from a roof onto an airbag below, but he fell really strangely and very abruptly. When he awoke in the hospital, he claimed that he had been pushed. Harvey Stevens, who played Damien in the movie, disappeared completely. Kevin Burns, who was an executive producer for the movie, even hired a private detective to find the boy, but nothing turned up. He did come out of hiding. He's okay. He came out of hiding to play a minor role in the remake, which was released June 6th, 2006. As far as we know, nothing weird has happened in that movie. So the next movie I'm going to talk about is Rosemary's Baby. Another movie about the birth of the Antichrist, which was released in 1968. I will say the Rosemary's Baby is one of my favorite older movies. I don't like a lot of old movies. I get very bored. They just don't hold my attention very well. But Rosemary's Baby is one of the few that I have watched multiple times. And I don't think I can ever get rid of it or get tired of it. These are literally all my faves. Yeah. So musical composer Christoph Kometa, he died in a fall or in the fall of 1968. The 37-year-old was roughhousing at a party when he fell off a rocky embankment and fell into a four-month-long coma. In April of 1969, producer William Castle was suddenly sick with severe kidney stones that landed him in the hospital. While delirious and hallucinating, he yelled, "Rosemary, for God's sake, drop the knife." He did end up surviving, but never produced a Hollywood hit again. Less than a year after the movie was released, director Roman Polanski's wife, Sharon Tate, and their unborn child were brutally stabbed to death in their home by members of the Manson family. So it's believed that Charles Manson used the song Helter Skelter by the Beatles as an inspiration for the murders, as Helter Skelter was written on the front door in blood. 12 years later, John Lennon was assassinated outside the Dakota, which was where Rosemary's Baby was mainly filmed. So that's, oh my God, I didn't know that's who directed it. Also, the Beatles are my favorite too. This is getting creepy. I'm not a big fan of the Beatles. I'm not going to lie. They're just not part of my genre of music that I listen to. There are a few John Lennon songs that I like Christmas songs, but I'm just not a big fan of the Beatles. But yeah, I did not know that Roman Polanski wrote or directed Rosemary's Baby. I knew he did, The Shining. I knew he did that, but I did not know that he did that one. So, for the 1960 Alfred Hitchcock film, Psycho, actor Anthony Perkins, who played Norman Bates, died in 1992 due to AIDS. He was a... Back in that era, you could not be a gay man. It was basically a career kill. Basically, you would never be hired ever again. So he was married. He married a woman, and they remained married. His wife, Barry Berenson, she was a passenger of American Airlines Flight 11, which crashed into the Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001, due to a terrorist attack. In 1988, Myra Davis, who played the body double of lead actress Janet Leigh, was murdered by her psycho-obsessed neighbor. She had been raped and strangled. He was finally convicted in 2001 after he had strangled another 60-year-old woman. When she was murdered, I think she was 71, but the second woman that was able to get him caught was a 60-year-old woman. I did not know when I was doing my research that Janet Leigh is actually the mother of Jamie Lee Curtis. I found that out when I was doing all of my other research, and it just happened to pop up. It popped up for a completely different movie. It was for The Exorcist, oddly enough. But one movie that should not come as a surprise is the 1973 movie The Exorcist. Not only is it another movie about demons and the devil, but what many don't know is that it was adapted from a book based on a true story. Basically, Roland Doe's family. Roland Doe was an 8-year-old boy who was being possessed, and he had two different exorcisms done, one in Maryland and then one in St. Louis, Missouri. I didn't know it was based on a true story. Yeah, it was. I actually, The Exorcist is my favorite movie. It is my all-time favorite horror movie, followed by It. I own the extended release. I try to watch it every Halloween. Like it's one of my all-time favorite movies. So I've done a lot of interest, like research into it. And I actually used to own the William Blatty, the book written by William Blatty. So basically Roland Doe's family asked William Blatty to change the gender of the possessed child to a girl to protect Roland's identity. Roland had no memory of the exorcism and went on to retire from NASA decades later. Oh my gosh. Sorry. Whew. I thought it was a murder hornet. It was, although I never could get scared on that movie. Exorcism of Emily Lotes. You know, I'm going to just say this right now. I loved The Exorcism of Emily Rose as well, especially because it's based on the true story of Annalise McHale. But the only thing that I could come, like I expected that movie to be cursed as well. The only thing that anybody ever said was that Naomi Watts, I believe, is the investigator for that movie or in the movie. And she said that the only weird thing that she experienced was that at 3:15 in the morning, her alarm or her radio would turn on and it would be classical music. But that was the only weird thing that she ever experienced. Roland Doe had no memory of the exorcism, and he went on to retire from NASA decades later. I didn't even know that he had anything to do with NASA. I didn't know they even knew who he was besides his pseudonym. I do plan on eventually searching to see if I can find out who he was specifically, see if I can find somebody named Roland who, you know, was part of NASA. So anyways, shooting was delayed for The Exorcist when the set meant to be the McNeil home burst into flames. So basically the entire set burnt down, but the only room that remains like untouched by the fire was Reagan's room. Look up astrologists also. Yeah, I definitely will look up astrologists. But yeah, basically the only room that did not get destroyed was Reagan's room. It was found that a pigeon had found its way into one of the circuit boxes, which is what caused the fire. The scene where Reagan throws actress Ellen Burstyn, the woman that plays Chris McNeil, the mother. So the scene where she throws her, or she slaps her and she falls to the ground. The scream that Ellen lets out was actually her genuine scream. The harness that she was wearing pulled her too hard and she ended up landing on her Cossacks. And she developed a permanent spine injury that she still deals with to this day. She deals with chronic pain every day because of that injury. Lots of bugs flying. Where did it go? There it is. Trying to keep it in front of me. So on the day of filming, on the first day of filming, Max von Sydow, who played Father Marin, his brother died. While filming, the actor who played Father Karras, Jason Miller, his son almost died when a motorcycle hit him. In post-production, actors Jack McGowran and Vasilik Mariaros, whose characters both died in the movie, also died. So there were, I believe, 9 deaths altogether that were tied during and shortly thereafter the production of The Exorcist. The scene where Linda Blair was flailing on the bed, her screams were also genuine. The device that they had made where that would like flail her up and down on the bed, it somehow malfunctioned and it basically caused her to injure her back as well. It wasn't a permanent brain injury, but she did injure her back. Specifically the screams where she's saying it burns, it's because it was really, like, the pain was like a burning type pain. In 1987, actress Mercedes McCambridge, who played the demonic voice of Reagan, she had a horrific tragedy occur in her family when her son murdered his wife and their children and then committed suicide. During the time the film was in theaters, many people were hospitalized due to fainting or experiencing heart attacks. One woman passed out and broke her jaw and ended up suing Warner Brothers, claiming that it was subliminal messaging that was making people pass out and freak out into the theaters. Warner Bros. Did end up settling out of court for an undisclosed amount of money. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are admitting that's true, but I believe that just means, you know, they couldn't prove that it wasn't true. So for the scene where Reagan gets the arteriogram, the doctor who performed the procedure was an actual x-ray technician. His name was Paul Bateson, and he was convicted of murder in 1979 for the death of a film critic and sentenced to 20 years in prison. However, Paul bragged about picking up six men at gay bars, slept with them, and then murdered and dismembered them. He disposed of their body parts in various plastic bags, dubbing them the bag murders. And to this day, even though investigators believe that he was the one that committed those murders, it still technically remains unsolved. Paul was released from prison in 2004. Fun little tidbits about The Exorcist, just not the cursed parts, but there was all of the, Ellen Burstyn actually happened to go to the movies while she was in town for something, and The Exorcist happened to still be in theater, so she was like, I'll go and see it. And she witnessed a woman pass out, and according to the media, people were not passing out at, like, the crucifix scene, which was 1,000 times worse in the book. It was a lot more graphic. It was a lot longer. It was horrible. They were all passing out at the part where she was getting the medical procedures. Because at that time, so an arteriogram, what they had to do was they had to insert a catheter into the brainstem, drain the cerebrospinal fluid, and then fill it with either helium or oxygen, some kind of air that would make the brain show up better on x-rays, because they didn't have the technology we have now. And you had to be constantly moving, to otherwise it can cause a lot of problems and make the headaches 1,000 times worse, because when you get any type of spinal puncture or anything like that, you get a really bad spinal headache. So I thought that was pretty interesting. The scene with the spider walk, where she's like walking down the stairs backwards. So that was not actually included in the theatrical release. He said it was because he thought it was too intense, William Friedkin, the director. But later on, he said that it actually was because they had to use a harness to be able to make it seem so seamless. And back then, they didn't have the technology to be able to hide the wires. So that's why it got included in the, they called it, fly. They called it the version you've never seen before. And that was in 2004 is when they released that. And that was when they felt they had the technology to be able to remove the wires in post-production. And I actually, in high school, I used to be able to do that spider walk. I used to be able to do the back bend and then walk. And I had a friend, and her dad was a teenager when The Exorcist came out. And so he saw it in theaters. And anytime I wanted to mess with him, I would do that. And he would almost hit me every single time because it scared him so much. And it just made my day. It was my favorite. So The Crow is also reported to be haunted. One of the film's carpenters was shocked by a scissor lift on the set, resulting in an electrical burn. You did that, and your sister made a great ring creeper girl. Yeah, Mickey, my little sister, has like super long black hair. Not anymore, but she used to. So she would like put her hair in her face and just look at you really creepy. It was great. So yeah, he was burned by the scissor lift, or shocked by the scissor lift, resulting in an electrical burn. One of the stuntmen fell through a roof in between takes. A crew member accidentally stabbed himself in his hand with a screwdriver. A grip truck accidentally went up in flames on set. But the biggest thing that everybody talks about with The Crow is the death of Brandon Lee. So Brandon Lee was shot and killed when a live bullet was used instead of a blank in a prop 44 handgun. So I don't really view that as the Crow itself being haunted, cursed. I think that's more of the Lee family being cursed, because, you know, Bruce Lee, he died, I think, during filming. I think he died from an aspirin. But just a lot of the men have died in weird ways in that family. Okay. So, The Conjuring, another one of my all-time favorite movies. This one was also based on a true story about possession that the paranormal psychologist Ed Warren and his psychic wife Lorraine investigated. They've done a lot of cases. I've spoken about them a lot of times. You know, The Conjuring case, Annabelle, Amityville Horror. I believe they even were part of the, I can't remember. The case that happened in England, the Enfield haunting. So lots of big cases. They're in the process of turning a bunch of those cases into movies, as everybody knows. So basically, many phone calls between the screenwriters and Lorraine Warren, because Lorraine was involved in a lot of the writing. Not in the sense that she was writing the screenplays, but they would call her for verification about things, and they wanted to make sure that they did it in a way that was respectful to her and Ed, and that she was comfortable with. So when they would call her, a lot of times the phone would be full of static before just completely going dead. The line would just go dead. Many members of the real Perron family visited the set and were met with a large gust of wind that seemed to follow them around. At the time, their mother, Caroline, had stayed home, where she felt a presence of something in her home before suffering a really bad fall. I never found out whether she was able to survive, whether she broke a hip or anything like that, because, I mean, this happened in the 70s. But shortly after that, the hotel that the cast and crew were staying at caught on fire, and they had to evacuate. When working late one night, director James Wan's dog started growling at something that he could not see, and I'm a firm believer that animals are very sensitive to things that we can't see. They can see a lot of the things that we can't. And so my mom will tell you, whenever something happened with my dog, I believed it 100%. You know, there were times where he would bark at nothing, he would growl at nothing, and I would immediately be upstairs, "Mom, something's wrong. Bear's growling at something. I don't want to go back down there." But lastly, Vera Farmiga, who played Lorraine, she found her laptop had been slashed with what looked like 5 claw marks. Dakota says it too. Yeah, my mom's new dog, not new dog, he's 13. Her husky still does that at the same home. But yeah, she found 5 slash marks on her laptop in her home. Typically, I don't see that as being demonic. Demons don't typically do 5. Everything they do is in multiples of 3, so you'll see 6, or you'll see 3, or, you know, stuff like that. Not typically 5 full scratch marks. That seems weird to me. So, since we covered The Conjuring, it's only natural we talk about Annabelle. Annabelle is another case that Ed and Lorraine Warren investigated, but this time it's about a haunted doll. Fun fact, Annabelle was actually a large Raggedy Ann, but that to this day is still housed at Lorraine's house museum, the Warren Museum of Occult, or Occult Museum, Warren Occult Museum, in a glass enclosure. So the reason why they didn't use a Raggedy Ann in the movie versions is because they were not granted the rights to use it. Basically, the owners of the Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy did not want anything like that tied to their doll. So the other thing too to keep in mind is the very first Annabelle movie none of the Annabelle movies are actually directly related towards what happened with her. The closest account that they went into the backstory of Annabelle and what happened and how the Warrens came into contact with her is actually the opening scene to The Conjuring. Otherwise, the other two are just kind of like, hey, let's make a really scary background for how Annabelle came to be the way that she was. So while filming, John Leonetti found 3 claw marks on a dusty window. The demon in the film did only have 3 fingers. On the day of filming the scene where the demon chases the lead character up a flight of stairs, Joe Bishara, who played the demon, he was walking down a hall in full makeup, and unfortunately, there was a pane of glass. I can't remember exactly what, but it basically came and shattered on top. It fell on him and shattered.
Luckily, he was unharmed, but it definitely shook him up. On another day, a handyman in the movie was supposed to be killed by the demon in the hallway, that same hallway, but a lighting fixture fell and struck him in the head. The crew decided, and they ended up deciding not to move forward with filming that scene. A little fun fact, too. The apartment that was used in the filming of the first Conjuring movie where they move in, or Conjuring, Annabelle movie, where they move into the apartment complex actually was the very first apartment that Ellen DeGeneres lived in when she moved to LA. I just thought that was pretty interesting. So, during the Twilight Zone, the movie, director John Landis decided to push ahead with a stunt despite windy conditions. A helicopter flew out of control, landing right where actor Vic Morrow and two children, Micah Dinley, who was seven, and Renee Shinyi, Shinyi Chen, who was six. They were standing right there where it landed. All three of them were killed by the blades of the chopper and falling debris. Landis did end up being acquitted for manslaughter charges. The ironic thing to me is he decided to go through with this despite really dangerous conditions, but decided, because he was supposed to co-direct it with Steven Spielberg, but decided at the last, or not at the last minute, decided that he did not want to continue working with Steven Spielberg because he was cutting too many corners when it came to safety. It, just a little irony right there. So, my man, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, he did not believe in ghosts until he filmed the movie The Possession. So, I don't know if anybody watches, like, Supernatural. I know Eric does, but Supernatural or The Walking Dead. But he plays John Winchester and Negan in The Walking Dead. So, he was the father in The Possession about him and his wife were divorced, separated. And they had two daughters, and he ends up taking them during his visit to a yard or estate sale. And his daughter finds this box, takes it home, ends up opening it, and all of these weird things start happening. She's clearly possessed. And it turns out it's called a debuch box, which is basically, it's a Jewish lore where you would basically kind of trap a demon in this box. So he did not believe in any ghosts or anything like that till he filmed this movie. Light bulbs would it's a good movie. I highly recommend it. But light bulbs would explode randomly just out of the blue. You made me watch that, didn't you? I did make you watch that with me, Eric. I thought it was good. I don't know if you liked it. You tend to not like those scary movies with me. You only watch them because I make you. The cast and crew felt a cold chill following them around. Going to, if I haven't already, do it, Mom. I couldn't even get my husband through. Really? The Shining's not even that scary. We watch scary movies all the time. I watch them by myself. Like, I'll watch them by myself when everybody else is sleeping. I love scary movies. He's a basic bitch sometimes. Yeah. I'm lucky Eric will watch them with me. I don't know what I would do if I have to be in a relationship where I can't watch the things that I love the most. But LOL, he heard you. That was my goal. My bad, Ginger's husband. So, anyways. Aw, come on, haha. A storage facility did end up catching fire and destroying the box that was used as the debuch box. So, one movie that Chad does with me too, and it's cool. He supports my book too. Good. We just watched a Fantasy Island on Monday, and that one was like an old TV show that was like wholesome and family oriented, and they turned it into a scary movie, and I loved it. We watch them all the time. We watch scary movies all the time. So, anyways, one movie that is not thought of or that's not a scary movie is The Passion of the Christ. Love it. The plane. Yes, that scene. So, Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus, and assistant director Jan Michelini, were actually both struck by lightning during the filming of the Sermon of the Mount. However, Jan was also struck a second time by lightning. Many people were also hospitalized while seeing the film in theaters. That was one thing that I remember when people... Dude, you're freaking me out. My aunt knows Jim Caviezel. Nice! That's awesome, Ginger. I remember somebody when I was growing up that my sister dated the kid, and his dad was like friends with us. But they were telling us that when they watched it, there was a picture of Jesus that kept falling off the wall. And that weirded me out. Like, I don't see why a movie about Jesus would cause a picture of Jesus to fall off the wall repeatedly. That's just weird to me. But there were a lot of people that were also hospitalized while watching the movie in theaters. Moulin Rouge is another non-horror movie. Nicole Kidman broke a rib once from falling during a dance sequence, and then again when wearing a corset to achieve an 18-inch waist. There were also many scenes filmed from the waist up after a fall tore the cartilage in her knees, putting her in a wheelchair. John Leguizamo still has to do physical therapy after being forced to wear heavy prosthetics for his role. The other thing, too, is I'm not one to like those types of movies, but I'm more willing to watch it because Courtney Love apparently tried out for the role of, Nicole Kidman got, and she basically hates Nicole Kidman for it now, that she didn't get the role that she wanted. And I think that's hilarious, and I'm a lot more willing to watch it now. So, the other big one that I wanted to talk about is The Wizard of Oz. So, The Wizard of Oz is believed to be extremely cursed. Before we get into it, the scene that everybody talks about with the munchkin that committed suicide in a scene hanging in the shots, that is not actually true. It was a big bird, basically. It's not, nobody committed suicide on the set of The Wizard of Oz. So with that said, Judy Garland was absolutely miserable during her filming. Not only was she forced to eat only one meal a day, but she was also forced to take barbiturates to deal with her intense schedule. So she was going days at a time without sleep. They were basically amphetamines. She was forced to stay at just 98 pounds and was told to smoke 80 cigarettes a day to curb her appetite. She was also sexually abused by the movie execs, which doesn't come as a complete surprise, seeing as it came out in 1939. Back in that era, you know, it's not uncommon. It was not uncommon at all. Doesn't make it okay by any means at all, but I was not surprised when I heard that. So Buddy Ebsen, who played the original Tin Man, he had to bow out after a severe allergic reaction to his makeup. Jack Healy, his replacement, did not do any better. The makeup was made using aluminum powder, which coated the inside of his lungs and gave him an eye infection. One scene for Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West, called for her to disappear in a cloud of smoke through a trap door in the floor. Well, the pyrotechnics malfunctioned and went off too early, and it set her wig, her costume, and her makeup on fire. She did come back on the condition that she not work with fire ever again on the set. The dwarves used to portray the Munchkins would party hard in between scenes. So bad that the crew had to basically babysit them to make sure they weren't pulling knives out on each other. It's also believed that the dwarves were pimping themselves out to the crew to supplement their income because they were not getting anything. The dog made more than they did. Like, what's a dog need that much money for? I just don't get it. So some of the flying monkeys were also, wow, I am learning lots of weird shit this time around. So I am weird about random knowledge. Like, I'm one of those people that if you ask me a question, I likely have some type of knowledge about it. It's a gift. So some of the flying monkeys were almost killed when the suspension cable snapped, plummeting them to the ground. Luckily, they survived, so that's not that big of a, you know. Judy Garland did die in 1969 from a barbiturate overdose after many failed suicide attempts. Frank Morgan, who played the wizard, was in a severe car crash a few months after the movie released. He and his wife were injured and their driver died. 11 years later, the night before filming Annie Get Your Gun, he died in his sleep from a heart attack. So that's that on Wizard of Oz. The other one is the Superman curse. This one I actually take, I believe, a lot in this one. This curse spans multiple movies, not just one movie, you know, it's multiple movies. It started with George Reeves, who played Superman in the TV series The Adventures of Superman from 1951 to 1958. Reeves committed suicide via gunshot in June of 1959. Christopher Reeves, which I couldn't tell if they were of any relation or not, but Christopher Reeves was Superman in the movies from 1978 until 1987. However, during an equestrian competition, he was thrown from his horse, landing on his head in 1995. He was left with multiple fractures of the first and second cervical vertebrae, rendering him paralyzed from the neck down. He died on October 10th, 2004, from heart failure brought on by his condition. His wife died in 2006 from lung cancer at 44. Kate Bosworth, who played Lois Lane in Superman Returns, even blames this curse for her relationship with Orlando Bloom ending. Likely, though, that's from, they're big actresses and actors. They have big, massive schedules. Like, it's not surprising. All I know is that we need to protect Brandon Routh from the Superman curse at all costs. Because he's awesome. He's my favorite character from the Arrow. But yeah, that's it. Oh, another little tidbit of information that I have is the role of Reagan McNeil in The Exorcist actually almost went towards Jamie Lee Curtis. But this is how I found out about about how her and Janet Leigh were related, was Janet Leigh actually told her, no, don't go for that one. What about the Leighs? Let me check. Okay. So what I'm finding about the Leigh family curse is that, come on, load. Come on. Okay. So Bruce Lee's biopic, depicted, what is going on with my pop-ups? Okay. Bruce Lee biopic predicted his son's death before he did. Why are you refreshing? I don't know what it's doing. Okay. Okay, hold on. I gotta go to a different website. This is not working. Okay. So Bruce Lee was. So he was born in San Francisco on the 27th of November, 1940. This is Bruce Lee. While his father was there touring with the Cantonese opera as an actor. Bruce was originally given the name Siphon, which was a feminine name meaning small phoenix by his mother. She chose to give him her son a female name due to the fact that she was previously given birth to a son who died. Bruce's mother was deeply superstitious, so gave Bruce a girl's name in an attempt to fool any evil spirits into thinking her son was actually a daughter. Let's see here. I don't know. It's not really saying anything. It's just saying that he unexpectedly died. Oh, here we go. The curse. The death of both father and son has raised many questions over the years. With Bruce, it was mainly how could a young man as physically fit as he just die so suddenly? With Brandon, the questions were related to the safety or lack thereof during a film's production. These questions have been answered, but many people refuse to accept them and instead try to look for alternate reasons for their deaths and creating a puzzle they can't solve. Conspiracy theories that include both Bruce and Brandon being killed by triads due to the actions of Bruce when he was a teenager are also mentioned. Perhaps the biggest theory is known as the Lee family curse or the Bruce Lee curse. The idea of this curse seems to come from the fact that Bruce had an older brother who died as a baby before Bruce was even born. It has been said that Bruce's family were deeply superstitious and believed an evil spirit was following them and targeting their children. But if this is true, then why is Shannon Lee alive while her brother Brandon is not? Well, it's also said that the evil spirit only targets the males in the family, but this theory hardly holds water either. If an evil spirit really is killing the males of the Lee family, then why is Bruce's younger brother, Robert Lee, still very much alive and will turn 70 years old this year, as of writing? And why did his older brother, Peter Lee, live until 2008 when he passed away at 69? Another reason why so many people believe there's a curse on the family is due to the eerie similarities between Bruce Lee's final film, Game of Death, and the tragic accident that killed Brandon Lee on the set of The Crow. For those not in the know, after Bruce died, it became popular knowledge that he was working on another film and that he had already filmed several scenes for it. Fans wanted to see his final film brought to the big screen, so a team of filmmakers were assembled to piece together Game of Death and finish the work Bruce started. If you have seen the film, then you know what a shameless and insulting mess of a movie it is. From using actual footage of Bruce's real funeral, complete with Bruce Lee himself dead in his casket, to completely ignoring the original vision and message he wanted to convey just to make a bog-standard cookie-cutter kung fu flick to cash in on the superstar's popularity. Anyway, in the butchered Game of Death flick, there is a scene where Bruce Lee's character is shot and supposedly killed while making a film, something that would very sadly become true for his son, Brandon Lee. Then, of course, there are the other bizarre coincidences while Brandon was shooting The Crow 2. You see, Brandon was engaged and due to marry his fiancée, Eliza Hutton, after filming and finishing The Crow, and they were in the final week of the film when the tragedy happened, too. Eric Draven, the character Brandon played in the film, was set to marry his fiancée within the film, too, but was killed before that could happen. It's this kind of food that feeds the conspiracy and curse theorists. For me, there is no curse and never was. We have just sadly been robbed of two amazingly talented and charismatic people during the time of their lives. Two people who were both in the cusp of becoming the movie stars they so badly wanted to be. So basically, that's it.
I seen an article from China spokesperson that provided more in-depth info of the curse targeting the two. If you could find that and send that to me, Mom, I would read it. I'll have to see if I can find it again. It was a few years ago. All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed it this week. I definitely enjoyed doing the research for this one. It was a good week. I enjoyed it a lot, and I hope you all do too. Have a wonderful night and stay safe and enjoy your weekend, guys.